Good evening and good afternoon, and welcome to the fifth class in Surfing Reality in the world of the Spandakarikas, the world of the pulsing vibrancy of Shakti. And I also want to say a belated happy Yom Kippur and happy Vijaya Dashami or Dussehra, which is the last day of the Navaratri Goddess Festival. I always find it so, I don't know, interesting, resonant, powerful, profound, that these two holy days, these two very important festivals, the High Holy Days of Judaism and the Navaratri celebration of India, of the Shakta tradition, really basically happen at the same time. They're, because they're both connected to the autumn moons, the new moon, the waxing moon of this month of usually October, sometimes late September. And it just, it really is a testament to the ancient quality of these religious experiences that do they really do arise from the sense of the cycles of nature. And even though the Jewish religion is all about the Father God, the Father Deity, and the Navaratri religious celebrations are all about the Mother Deity, somehow they complement each other and they're coming together in these annual moon cycles. Just feels very resonant of the, let's call it in our language, the oneness, the union of Shiva and Shakti, even when they are not necessarily consciously aware of being in union. So let's begin by bringing ourselves inward, and although I know many of you are already quite inward, but we're going to do it by tuning into the different pulsations of energy in the body, the felt sense of Spanda, of Shakti within us. And by the way, I know that we are slightly past both Vijaya Dashami and Yom Kippur, but nonetheless, I think we're still in the energy. So one of the greatest of the tantric masters, Abhinavagupta, wrote that even when we're in deep meditation, when all sights, all sounds, anything that has to do with the outer senses disappears, even the inner senses disappear, that is, lights, we stop seeing lights, we stop hearing inner sounds, we're just in that stillness. He says, nonetheless, even in that state, the sense of touch remains in a subtle form. And what he calls the sense of touch, the inner sense of touch, is the experience of blissfulness, which is, in fact, the felt experience of Shakti, of Spanda, who is identical with this core sense of blissfulness, of being touched by a loving, you know, infinitely subtle hand, let's call it, that we associate with the palpable feeling aspect of the divine, which is, of course, Shakti and Spanda. So the fact that we call, that this text is called the verses on Spanda, the verses on pulsation, and that Spanda is one of the main names for the creative aspect of the divine, manifesting as every form of pulsing awareness from the subtlest to the very physical, is not an accident, you know, because the sense of touch, as we experience it in the sensations of the breath, the sensations in the body, is, when we understand it properly, a form of meditation on the divine. So why don't you find the movement of the breath and the sense of pulsation in the breath. It's always nice to begin by feeling the touch of the breath at the nostrils, which is in itself a place of pulsation and touch. And then see if you can deepen your sense of breath by tuning into how the body subtly moves as the breath flows in and out. Spanda Shakti manifests in our body as the flow of breath. And in so many other ways, of course, but the unique property, or let's say the very special property of breath, is that it is such a powerful link between the physical and the subtle, as well as between the universal life force, the life force that flows through the whole cosmos, and the life force that keeps our body alive, which is, of course, not a different life force, but which we, in our ordinary state, are not aware of as being the same. So please begin to feel yourself being breathed by the Shakti, by the life force. And even if there's a, even if attention and awareness are outgoing and disrupted, so to speak, for want of a better word, by the events of the day, just by recognizing that breath is breathing you, that Shakti is breathing you, it begins to take us into a deeper felt sense of the recognition that we are being lived by something that is both intimately within us, living as us, and also so much greater, vaster, more mysterious than our ordinary sense of self. And as you feel into the flow of the breath and the feeling of perhaps beginning to experience how you are actually being breathed, see if you can become aware of that subtler movement of the heartbeat, of the pulse in the heart. And then of the sensations that you are immediately aware of inside your body. I'm aware of a little ache beneath my left shoulder blade. And of the feeling of my buttocks against the chair. And as you become aware of these sensations in the body, close your eyes if they're not closed already. And just consider what it would be like at this moment to be a newborn baby, aware of breath and sensation, but without any concept that this is a body, without any concept that there's such a thing as a breathing process. There's essentially, for a newborn baby, as far as we know, mostly the experience of sensation. And assuming that the environment is kind enough, the experience is probably pretty blissful, pretty sweet. So see if you can be present to the sensations that come into your awareness, as if you were a newborn baby, not identifying a particular sensation as belonging to my shoulder or my head, because you have no concept of shoulder or head. Just feeling this massive sensation that you will come to recognize as this body. but which, in fact, is not limited by the body any more than breathing is limited by the nostrils or the lungs. Just let yourself be in that experience of breath and sensation, which are our immediate experience of spanda. And that, of course, is another expression of spanda in the form of sound. So let's continue by chanting the first the mantras to Goddess Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamandaye Viche Swaha. We'll chant them 5 times, and then we'll chant 3 times the first verse of the Spandakatikas, praising that Shankara, who is the source of the power of the Shaktis, by whose expansion and contraction the universe is absorbed and comes into being. Om Aim Hrim Klim Chamundaye Viche Swaha. 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 And now the introduction to the Spandakarikas. Yasya mesha nimesha pyam jagata pralayodayo tam shakti chakra vibhava prabhavam shankaram stumaha. Yasya mesha nimesha pyam jagata pralayodayo tam shakti chakra vibhava prabhavam shankaram stumaha. Yasyonmeshanimeshabhyam jagata paralayodayau tam shakti chakra vibhava shankaram prabhavam shankaram stumaha. Om shanti shanti shanti. In this class, we're going to look at several of the core tantric practices, practices that many of you are familiar with because I do them a lot in my classes, and many of you may have learned them in other people's classes as well. And we're also going to look at three actually very esoteric verses which turn out to be connecting points to these practices that have become, in modern times, kind of go-to practices in the yoga world, and yet which are linked to a very deep and subtle understanding of what is really going on in the human body during the processes of awakening. And we'll start with the bhavana, the attitude that is really core to all of Tantra and to certainly to the Spandhakaratas, the attitude that the practices and the contemplations that we do are not ends in themselves, although they can be very satisfying, but are doorways, pathways that are designed to give us different ways of connecting to Shakti within our inner field of awareness. One of the conversations, one of the threads that's been going on the listserv, and there are so many beautiful threads that I'm really kind of, I would say, blown away by the wisdom and the honesty and the just the connectedness that's going on the listserv with all of you guys. But one of the issues that came up last week was that the issue of how someone wrote in to say that meditating on awareness just, you know, made her feel disconnected, whereas meditating on sensation brought her more and more deeply into the self. And what I and several other people said in response to this is that really this is why we have different practices, because if we understand that there is a quiver full of different approaches to yoga that are available and that are all capable, if practiced with, I would say, not only vigilance, but also with what the sages call right view. That's what they say in Buddhism, right view. My teacher used to call it right understanding. In other words, the recognition of non-duality and why we're doing all this in the first place. That any one of a number of ways of contemplating can open up into that ineffable suchness that is at the core of all experience. And I also want to say that the Svanda teachings really do intend for us to self-recognize, to recognize ourselves as a way of seeing into the absolutely sacred nature of our own experience. You know, that starting with the breath, starting with the recognition of the utter sacredness of the breath, starting with the recognition, you know, or continuing with the recognition that our sensory experience, whether it's of sensation or of sight or of sound, is also a sacred experience if we understand it. And also, of course, if we have the grace of the Spanda Shakti. So I also want to say, this is a lot of explanation before we get into the center of things. Again, as a reminder, and I think a lot of us are finding this in the class, that these verses and these teachings contain their own intrinsic empowerment. They are actually mantras, these verses, and the teaching in them encode the lived experience of a very, very great sage who channeled this wisdom, and then of the generations of disciples who lived it as well and commented on it, and also of our generations of students who have brought our own lived experience into these verses. And so we re-empower them for ourselves. And when we say that these verses and the teachings in them are mantras, if you remember verse 26, which we worked with in week 3, verse 26 says that mantras empowered by Spanda, all mantras are empowered by the Spanda principle. They're enlivened by Spanda. And that the verse says that mantras are endowed with omniscience, which is a shorthand way of pointing out that the power in mantra is divine power. In other words, it's omniscience being one of the recognized qualities of the divine, of the ultimate. So even before you have an actual experience of the truth of these verses, and even if you haven't yet learned the system that they're based on, the empowerment inside the teachings as you practice with them has a kind of magical effect on the way we think about ourselves and the way we think about the world. And especially because nearly everyone in this class has done a lot of reading and a lot of practice and a lot of self-reflection, there's a kind of a what's often called entitlement to being opened by these verses, even though different verses may mean more to you than others. And also what they're doing is beginning to chisel away at the, that quality in the bound human consciousness that's called ajnana or ignorance, both the innate ignorance, the built-in sense of separation. The spandakarikas are all about telling us that even though we may feel separate, that we are constantly being reminded by the breath, by the awareness that we through which we experience everything through our actual sensory experience, through the process of perception itself, we're constantly being reminded, if we can recognize that, of our connectedness to the whole. So even more than being positive affirmations and ways of using the mind to create a more positive viewpoint, which is valuable in itself, these teachings are like droplets of enlightened awareness that I think for so many of us, certainly for me, over and over again through the years, they kind of sprout in the increasingly fertile soil of the field of awareness. So I'm just really grateful also to those of you who have confessed that you're here despite being unfamiliar with the system of non-dual tantric Shaivism. And I want to also say a global thank you to the fact that non-dual teachings have seeped into our culture enough so that even if you've never studied this precise tradition, nonetheless, it's not unfamiliar because you've heard and read it from others. And I also want to suggest that if you are new to the system, that you make a point of reading the notes on Tantra that are on the course webpage, which does actually give a fairly detailed kind of Cliff's Notes overview of the system. So I do want to drop into, for a moment, to a couple of the basic paradigms that are helpful. And even though most of us have heard this before, that nonetheless, it's part of this sacred process that we hear these teachings and they help us self-recognize. So just a basic overview reminder, the tantric worldview is based on the insight that, one great I am awareness is not only the source of everything, but actually lives inside every atom, meaning that our atoms are not just 99% space and only 1% actual matter, the atoms and molecules of our bodies and everything else are condensed particles of Shiva Shakti, of this ultimate consciousness, which pervades everything. And it's really the basis of the Spanda system. It's what makes it non-dual. Even though the tantric sages are incredibly sophisticated about the fact that multiple level layers of reality coexist and that all of them are real. In other words, it's not that everything is consciousness and therefore the Douglas firs I'm seeing outside my window and this body that I just pinched to remind myself that it's here, that these are not real. They are certainly real. It's just that they're not necessarily real in states other than the dream state in the sense that we don't experience them. So, tantric Shaivism saying that everything is part of one great mind doesn't mean that everything is one big shmush. There are obviously incredible varieties of things and beings within this universe. They're simply saying that the physical world, as well as all the subtle worlds that we may or may not be aware of, though experienced as solid in the waking state, is nonetheless fully pervaded by the incredibly subtle non-material intelligence and love that we call Shiva Shakti. And therefore, although we are going to experience the reality differently depending on whether we're awake, asleep, dreaming, or in deep meditation, and even though we do, in a sense, ascend to higher and subtler levels of experience as we progress spiritually, nonetheless, nothing is ever separate in any state from the great mind, which is not just out there, so to speak, holding everything, is also in here, accessible to us from any part of our inner world as well as from the outer world. So it's available to us, this truth, through grace, through practice. It's always really important to recognize that one of the things about this teaching, which is also true of most of the esoteric mystical teachings, you don't get to come in contact with them unless you have the grace to receive them. So all of us are automatically enrolled, so to speak, in this, in the course that Spanda Shakti is giving, whose path is the path of inner unfoldment and whose graduation, if that's a proper word, whose graduation actually never happens because there's always more blissfulness, there's always more unfolding that can happen. So there's a story that's often told. It's kind of a sweet story, which talks about how when Shakti manifests this universe, she manifests it originally without veiling our nature from us. In other words, even though we, in this original creation, this original manifestation, every human consciousness is experiencing itself as a embodied soul, nonetheless, it's very obvious that even as an embodied soul, we are part of the one. And what that means, the story goes, is that every time things get a little dicey on the earth plane, the souls will just merge back into the one and leave this, challenging sphere of the world of karma behind. And Shakti gets frustrated by this, and so she consults with her consort as to what they can do about it, because, she wants this game of the world with all of its, extraordinary dramas to exist, so that eventually, after all this experience has taken place, she will be able to experience herself going through various stages of consciousness and eventually realizing the truth, but not right away. So she and Shiva consult, and he suggests to her that she hide the key to the awareness of oneness. And as they think about it, they realize that because human beings are so incredibly creative, there's no place they can hide the key in the outer world where it won't be found. So they decide, oh, we'll hide it inside. We'll hide it in the heart, because human beings are so outgoing, are built to be so outgoing, that they'll never find it there. So I kind of love that story, partly because of the kind of intrinsic tease in it. You know, we're so outgoing, we never think to look inside. But I also want to say that although we normally think of the heart as being the center in the chest, in fact, in Tantra, the heart is considered not only to be the center in the chest, it's also considered to be God itself, and it's also considered to be the experience of I am. And the central channel in the subtle body, which is one of the places that we're going to go today together. So the keys, you know, the key to the inner world, the key to oneness, there is not just one. There are several keys, and there are several, let's call it, main keys. One of them, of course, is the recognition of awareness, of our own I am awareness, as a limited form of the great I am awareness, which is capable of expanding back into recognizing itself as what it is, you know, which is, of course, the source of that great statement, I am Shiva, or I am that, or I am the absolute, which is such a foundational teaching of Eastern spirituality. It's so that in finding that key, we begin by recognizing the I am feeling, the feeling of being, and practicing recognizing the felt sense of yourself without attaching it to identification with the body or the thoughts or any words or concepts. In other words, answering the question, who am I, without words, thoughts, emotions, ideas, memory. Just feeling into that I am sense without identification. And so, in fact, one of the great tantric teachers, contemporary tantric teachers I know, often says that if we think of our I am-ness, our felt sense of I, as Shiva, and the energetic movements in our body as Shakti, that, you know, we will be in the key. But another key, and this is really, has turned out to be one of my favorite meditations in my own personal practice and one I teach a lot, is the recognition that what in Sanskrit is called the Sushumna Nadi, or the Madhya Nadi, which means central channel. Sushumna means auspicious mind. The central channel in the inner body, which, as most of you know, runs from the perineum at the base of the spine all the way up to the crown at the top of the head, inside the inner body, inside the energy body, it runs up in a place that we may experience as being inside the spinal column, or the way I experience it is running just in front of the spinal column. As an object of concentration, I find it very powerful to feel it running just in front of the spinal column. And yet, when the key turns in the lock and you begin to experience the central channel as what it is, which I will explain in a moment through the verse, you realize that it's not confined either to the inner energy body or to the inside of the spine. it is actually a vast, expansive space that starts to open up as we enter the central channel. So we're going to look at this aspect of ourselves, at this key to experiencing the self, through two of the verses in the Spandakarikas, and I will tell you what they are. They're really worded in what is sometimes called shadow language or hidden language. In other words, they're in the language of metaphor, maybe because the sages wanted to hide this understanding. So verse 23 says, taking firm hold of the spanda, that is the felt experience of Shakti, the awakened yogi remains firm with the resolution, I will surely carry out whatever it will tell me. And I'm going to explain what that means in a moment. Verse 24 says, resting in the experience of that spanda, both the prana and the apana, the outward, the incoming and outflowing breaths, merge in the central channel, and by the upward flowing path of the central channel, they rise to the great ether of universal consciousness, which is called the sphere of Brahma, and are completely absorbed in it. So what both these verses are pointing to is the experience that we enter into by a kind of vertical meditation in this central channel. That is one of the ways that, you know, one of the meanings of the word heart in yoga, because the central channel is the core of our inner body. And here's the yogic teaching around this, which again I know is familiar to many of you. The tantric texts tell us that when Shakti, the Spanda, has completed her great creative work of manifesting universes, she comes to rest inside the human body, coiled up at the base of the spinal column in the perineum, in the subtle body. And this is such an extraordinary thing to contemplate, how this vast universal energy can also exist in her full form inside our energy body. It's so counterintuitive. And, you know, it really does take yogic practice and a lot of grace to get it, even though for so many of us, this experience of that energy working in our bodies, revealing herself, is the very stuff of our experience of awakening. So in her form, her resting form at the base of the spine, she's famously known as Kundalini Shakti, Kundalini meaning coiled, so she's called the coiled power. And when Kundalini is coiled and Shakti is, as it were, at rest, it's not that she's inert. She is actually working through our mind and senses, through our breath, but always manifesting that our experience of life outward from the center. In other words, instead of being able to recognize that everything is actually within awareness and that that awareness is our awareness, the coiled Shakti gives us the constant experience that the breath comes in and out of a body, that our senses are directed towards life and a world outside this body. And of course, in this process, we experience our own mental consciousness as being ceaselessly busy and constantly racing around throwing up data based on this feeling that the world and everything else is outside us. So, and Shakti, as we said earlier, Spanda, in her most palpable form, is operating in the human being as the prana Shakti, the breath, and as the mind. And And one of the ways in which the prana and the mind are described in the tantras is as the sun and the moon. The prana, the breath, being the sun, and the mind being the moon. So another way that this verse is interpreted is as the experience of the incoming and outgoing breath. And again, as those of you who've studied the yogic science know, the yogic texts say that we experience the breath flowing in and out through two subtle channels called the Ida and the Pingala, which correspond with our left and right nostrils. So the Ida, which corresponds with the left nostril, is said to be moonlight, feminine, and cooling. So the Ida is called the moon channel. The Pingala is said to be fiery, red, masculine, and heating, and is called the sun channel. As many of you know, there's a whole science in yoga and Ayurveda of regulating the breath as it moves through these channels, because the way the breath moves actually affects everything we do, from digesting our food to running or walking to making love. And somebody who knows that science will learn how to adjust the way the breath is flowing in the nostrils as a way of regulating the currents, you know, and we experience ourselves as the body. So one of the classical practices, one of the classical strategies of yoga is to coax the breath to flow in the central channel, the Sushumna Nadi, which runs between these two outgoing channels, like a kind of a subtle river that flows underground. And one of the names of this channel is the Saraswati Nadi, because in India there is a river called the Saraswati River that flows underground and is never seen, which is what the Sushumna Nadi is. So in the classical practice of tantric yoga, as we work with allowing the breath to move into the central channel, what happens is that the outgoing awareness automatically turns inward, which is why meditating on the breath moving vertically up and down the inner body is such a good meditation practice. And what happens when this modality stops being something you're doing deliberately and begins to take off on its own, begins to actually become a spontaneous practice through the grace of the Shakti, is that you do start having the experience that the breath stops moving. It stops flowing in and out of the nostrils. It gets very slow and sometimes even stops, which I know some of you have experienced. And when the breath slows and stops, there's a corresponding experience that starts to happen. That is, if you don't panic and think something is wrong, is a corresponding experience where the thoughts begin to become very slow and the mind becomes naturally quiet and literally moves inward, moves into the inner body, into the subtle body. And as it does so, there will come a moment when the Sushumna Nadi starts to expand. Sometimes it expands, this is actually very often my own experience, it expands almost as though my inner mind or my inner body had kind of turned inside out. So instead of feeling like my central channel is inside the body, it's like it begins to widen such that the body is inside it, or even such that the body itself disappears and I'm no longer aware of my physical body. I'm in this inner state of meditation. And I know that many of you have that experience. The other thing that happens, that, you know, which is what the text says, what verse 24 says, is that as we coax the breath into this sushumna, into the central channel, Kundalini Shakti begins to move through the sushumna nadi. The energy starts to flow, taking our awareness upward through the chakras, often up. Often it feels like our attention is moving up from the heart through the head. Sometimes it feels as though it's expanding the head. Sometimes we feel it actually flowing upward through the crown of the head. And it begins to open the upper chakras, the upper centers in the body, and sooner or later, sometimes just spontaneously in meditation, but often over a period of time, it takes us completely out of the sphere of our ordinary consciousness and into an expanded realm, which we experience in many, many different ways, but which is definitely a non-ordinary experience of ourselves. So this is why this practice of following the breath and the mantra up and down the inner body is such a great way of tuning into the spanda, or rather of, let's call it, standing in the doorway that Shakti can open at her will in order to give us the experience of this extraordinary inner world that is present for us. So by doing the practice of focusing awareness in the central channel and breathing vertically with full presence and attention, we're drawn into the inner world in a very powerful way. So we're going to practice that in a moment. But I just want to say something about verse 23, which is actually speaking to this practice. So the verse says, taking firm hold of the spanda, which in this case is the sense of the energy moving inside the central channel. The awakened yogi remains firm with the resolution, I will carry out whatever she will tell me. So taking firm hold of the spanda, the awakened yogi remains firm with the resolution, I will carry out whatever she will tell me, or whatever it will tell me, whatever spanda shakti shows you. And this is, again, as many of you know, it's a crucial part of the sadhana of the spandakarikas and the sadhana of shakti, the essential tantric sadhana, because there is a point in practice in meditation where the meditation begins to guide itself. In other words, where, and I know many of you experience this, and you know a lot of conversation on this listserv and on other listservs in the classes that we do together is about how to handle this when, you know, all of a sudden you feel a current of energy pulling you in a particular direction, or when you start feeling pressure in your head, or when the body starts to sway or move, or, you know, the attention begins to expand the heart. And, you know, sometimes when the energy is expanding the heart or the head, it can feel uncomfortable for a moment, or, you know, until you understand what it is that's actually going on. So a lot of the things that we question in our experience, you know, everything from visions to feelings of pressure to movements, are actually being pointed to by this verse. In other words, having the resolution, I will carry out whatever it will tell me, means allowing ourselves in meditation and ultimately in our lives to be carried by the inner impulse, the inner will of Shakti, which is not the same thing as the will of our egoic mind, but is a very deep current of prompting, of guidance, that directs our meditation and that ultimately can begin to direct the rest of our life. And what surrender is in this, in the tantric practice, in the tantric world, is learning to recognize the pull of Shakti, which is essentially a pull, the pull of an inner current that wants to take us closer to her, that is the expression of what we could say is Shakti's yearning for us to meet her in the inner world, in the inner body. So then verse 24 says, resting on the experience of the spanda, both the incoming and outgoing breaths, the prana and apana, known as the sun and the moon, get merged in the central channel and rise through the upward path of Sushumna to the great space of universal consciousness. So, in other words, as we practice, as we feel the flow of Spanda Shakti, we let it center our awareness in the central channel, in the center of the inner body. And at some point, sooner or later, there'll be the experience that the breath is actually moving spontaneously within this channel. And we realize that rather than having to create a visualization or an energetic feeling sense of the central channel, we realize that it's really there, and our attention and our breath is, our awareness is moving through it, perhaps moving up and down and eventually rising. And the experience of the Shakti in the central channel is often simply an experience of feeling deeply centered and at rest. So we're going to do this practice now. And so you can find your posture. Shake yourself out if you've gotten contracted. Let the breath flow naturally in whatever way it wants to flow. But begin to bring your attention inward. And for those of you who've done this practice regularly, you have probably already let's say, created an experience of that inner channel, which you can return to. And those of you who haven't done this practice so much, see if you can start by feeling your perineum, the knob of flesh between the anus and the sexual organ, and simultaneously feeling the space at the crown of the head. And then begin to be aware of a kind of, I like to call it a laser beam, or just a felt sense of a beam of energy that flows from the perineum upward along the back body just in front of the spinal column, flowing up through the lower abdomen, up through the upper abdomen, through the center of the chest, up through the throat, through the center of the head, and up through the crown. We're going to practice by allowing the inhalation to flow down towards the perineum and the exhalation to flow up towards the crown, moving along the central channel. So what you're doing is really allowing the breath which is a tremendous repository of Shakti and awareness, allowing the breath to bring your attention in an increasingly centered way into this subtle channel the inhale breath flowing down the channel, the exhale breath flowing up. And though I don't want to give confusing instructions, there are some of you who find it easier to experience this the other way. Inhaling up from the sushumna and exhaling down, that's okay. But my instruction for those of you who are comfortable following it is to allow the inhalation to flow downward, down to the base, and then flow upward as the exhalation up to the crown. And of course, as thoughts arise, first notice them as a thought, and then see if you can remind yourself that the thoughts too are Shakti. The breath is Shakti. And that rather than forcing your attention into the sushumna nadi, you're actually allowing the breath, which is such a powerful form of the Spanda Shakti, to carve out an awareness of this central column of energy, this vibrating central channel. Inhaling, letting the breath flow down towards the base, really even seeing if you can begin to feel a sense of the breath flowing down your inner body and flowing upward. And we're going to stay with this for a few minutes. And as we've done in our foundational meditation throughout the class, you're invited to add the mantra to the felt sense of the breath, because within the mantra syllables, Om Ayin Fein Kleen, is the awakening Shakti, the divine, the goddess Spanda Shakti, in the form of these syllables. And you can allow Om Ayim to flow with the inhalation down the central channel, and Ayim Kleem to flow with the exhalation upward towards the crown. See if you can now allow your attention inside the central channel to move a little deeper, almost as though you were walking your attention inside this inner tube, if you will, this inner channel. See if you can imagine this inner channel expanding and opening. Without in any way forcing this or stressing about it. See if you can begin to feel that as the breath flows up and down the inner channel, that the channel itself widens so that it actually fills and encompasses your entire body. So that instead of this vertical plane being inside you, you can feel as though it surrounds the body. It's not inside the body. It surrounds the body. So the body and the awareness you have of it is inside the central channel. And see if you can become aware that even as you're following the breath and adding the mantra to it and sensing the vertical movement and feeling it all taking place, as if within a channel that holds your body, see if you can become aware that all of these layers of experience in your meditation are being held in awareness. That it's all happening inside this very subtle knowing experience. This very subtle experience and consciousness. It is present to the meditation practice, to the mantra, to the sense of a channel of energy that the breath can move vertically through. Just feel that awareness which we pointed to again and again. That awareness without which you really wouldn't be able to experience anything. Just feel that awareness for a moment as yourself. sense how everything that's going on in your experience from the sensations to the movement of breath, to the experience of the Sushumna-nadi, to the mantra, to whatever sounds are around. As all arising and subsiding inside this one experiencing awareness. And let yourself for a moment take rest in it. And of course, can continue to use that part of your mind that needs to focus on something specific. The flow of the breath up and down the central channel with Om Aim, flowing with the in-breath and Aim Shim, flowing with the exhalation. The specific play of these meditation concentrations happening within that awareness that makes it possible for your life to be experienced. So you can open your eyes or not. No need to open your eyes. if you want to make a note of something that arose during meditation, you can take a moment to do that. And we're also going to take a moment to hear any questions or any comments or any reports that might have come up for you during that practice. So Deb is going to notice who raises their hands, and you can press 2 to bring yourself to raise your hand. And Deb will call on you.
You need to press *2 to raise your
Sorry,
hand.
Sorry, sweetheart.
That's
okay. I got a little stoned during that meditation. So
we have somebody from Vancouver, BC.
Okay.
Hi, Sally. This is Coco. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, it's Coco Ferrari calling. I'm a little stoned from the meditation myself, but something I've been noticing in my practice lately is a mild irritation at trying to track the mantra. And I feel like it's been pulling me out a little bit, and trying to follow my breath through the central channel has also been a point of mild stress to me during my meditations. And just now, I just let both of those things go, and I felt like it went very, very deep. And I'm wondering if that's something that's a natural evolution, or if that's something that I should work through the irritation and continue with holding on to the
stress. Really great question. And can you mute yourself for a minute while I speak, and then you can unmute yourself again, or Deb will unmute you again. So there are going to be moments in meditation when the mind is naturally drawn inside, and this is actually what this verse means when it says that we have the resolution to do whatever the Shakti tells us. When your awareness is being pulled inside and it's going into resting in this subtle essence of mind, that is when meditation is happening on its own, trying to concentrate on something feels unnatural and irritating. So it's completely fine to let go of the object of meditation, to let go of the mantra or the focused breath awareness, and just let yourself be in that experience that's arising. But when your mind starts becoming active again, when you begin to come out of that deep state, then you want to go back to the mantra, or go back to the Sushumna Nadi, or tune into awareness of awareness. But you should understand that these instructions, which do come from, you know, the very deep well of awakened yogis' experience of the power in these subtle practices, are nonetheless not the goal. The goal is that immersion in the deep state, and that is actually what it means to merge in the central channel. It's actually to enter into that deep state. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I definitely feel that when I let go of the mantra in previous meditations, when I eventually let go of the mantra and eventually let go of the tracking of the breath, it's almost like everything becomes just absolutely silent and blissful and peaceful. And that is very helpful to remember that when the mind turns on, to turn back to the mantra. So thank you.
Yes, you're so welcome. It's actually a question which takes me into the next thing I want to talk about. But But instead of going there, let's see who else has a comment or a question.
We have someone from Oakland, California.
Okay. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Sally. This is such a wonderful course. I just wanted to say first that I've done a number of the courses recently with you in a five-day retreat at Esalen, and this was just a kind of culmination of the meditation that I practiced a lot since maybe for a year and a half with you, and so beautiful and really blissful. And my question is, I found myself doing, I think the word is bindu, but the contraction, you know, with sending the energy up and then relaxing mm-hmm. as energy came down. And it's a, you know, very blissful, almost orgasmic feeling. And I'm wondering if that's cheating or is that
not
really
cheating.
All right. Can do because it's
marvelous. Not cheating. Not cheating. It's the guidance of the Shakti. So, as Joseph Campbell famously said, follow your bliss.
It is blissful. I will keep following it.
It is, then. Yeah. And it's totally great. I mean, I think many of you are experiencing this natural morphing that occurs as you start a concentrated practice, and then then your consciousness relaxes and expands, and the practice itself can morph.
Mm-hmm.
Or just fall away, and you can feel yourself inside that state of expansion.
Mm.
So if it's not this is for everybody, because I know that both of these questions are representative of what happens with practiced meditators, you know, as we go deeper. So the thing to look out for is that you're not kind of casting through your mind and thinking, oh, maybe I should try this practice, but that it really is coming up as a, you know, as a kind of a natural gift of the Shakti in your meditation. Does that make sense, Patricia?
Mm. Yes, that makes sense. And what happened was that my body began to feel like it was the channel, the central channel.
Mm.
And then it was contained in the larger energy. And the bindu just kept intensifying it naturally. So I think it isn't just, oh, I should try this or that. It was just really...
No, it's definitely an arising of Shakti. It's, you know, it's what Shakti wants you to do. So you're so welcome.
Thank you for this blessed teaching, and the way you teach it is a gift. It's really.
Well, thank you for your incredibly powerful open awareness.
Yes. Thanks for the gift.
Deb loves you. Sharon on the website asked, Deb just texted me to say, am I the only one who feels exhausted from such deep concentration? So I don't know how to answer that, but I'm sure that there are other people who feel exhausted from deep concentration. In other words, there's often, well, I want to reframe that actually. There is the possibility that this turning inward is making you aware of exhaustion that's already there, which I think happens to many of us when we start turning inside. It's like we're outgoing and we're active and our minds are working and we're just kind of bypassing our tiredness. So that is one way of looking at it, that you're being called to take rest, which is one of the gifts that meditation can give us. But I want to, you know, make another suggestion that might make sense to you. And it is that as we turn inside, as we concentrate, as we do what is actually, especially in the beginning, a great effort to turn the outgoing mind and senses inward into concentration. It's an effort because ordinarily not only is the mind outgoing, but the mind is distracted. And I say this as one who has a naturally very distracted mind. I've sometimes thought I'm ADD because there's this tendency for the mind not to want to focus. So focusing is effortful. So that may be what you're feeling, and that exhaustion is the natural effect of doing something that the mind doesn't take to naturally. What the yogis always say about that is that what it often means is that the mind actually needs to be trained to be willing to stay in a concentrative state. The reason being that when the mind tends to be outgoing and distracted, it's very, very helpful in your process to spend some time focusing it inward, because that's what allows the inner state that's naturally there and that ultimately will appear without that kind of effort. So the effort to concentrate is important, and it can be tiring and challenging, and I would suggest that you keep at it. So that's number two. Number three is something that's a feature of Shakti-driven meditation, and you'll have to, since you're not on the phone, I can't ask you, but you might want to text it to Deb if you have an answer to this question. When meditation is being powered by Shakti, as we say, and as the mind starts to go within, there is a natural tendency to fall asleep. And I don't think there's anyone here who hasn't experienced that. In fact, one of the verses here, verse 25 actually, points to this, that when our minds are not fully trained to staying awake, which is one of the reasons why focus is very helpful and important, there is a tendency to feel pulled into the sleep state, to be pulled into an unconscious state. So that may be what's happening, and this is actually a natural stage in the process that almost everybody goes through at one time or another. I sent an answer into someone's question on the listserv, in which I quoted a great sage saint named Namdev, a 16th century saint named Namdev, actually I guess he was 13th century or 12th century, whose sadhana was chanting. And he sang this, he used to write songs, devotional songs, and one of his songs says, "Oh Lord, this mind is so out of control. When I know that your name is Nectarian, why can't I bring myself to chant it? I sit for meditation and I fall asleep." I mean, he goes on listing all these experiences that we normally have in the course of practice, not wanting to do it, falling asleep when we want to meditate. So it could be that. And any one of these reactions to concentrative practice is normal and often needs to be gone through. And the answer to it is a combination of perseverance and relaxation, or focus and surrender. So let yourself focus and then relax your focus and let yourself be present with what is, which in the best case is a kind of relaxation into pure awareness. So I offer that, and if that feels right to you as a possible explanation, that's great. And blessings on moving deeper and deeper into the experience of your inner being, the place where we take rest from exhaustion, and where eventually we come through the exhaustion into the state where we're radically energized by the inner Shakti. So thank you, Sharon. Any other questions?
We have someone from New Jersey.
Okay, hello. Do you want to give it, tell us your name?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes,
hi.
We can
I'm
hear
really
you.
Not in New Jersey, but I do have a name, but I don't want to tell you. Anyway, so this is in reference to what you said about taking firm hold of Inspanda. I'll surely carry out whatever she will tell me. And this is kind of in reference to what Coco said about irritation. And she said something else. But it's in the context of sort of an internal societal aspect of this. And I think what I'm trying to get to is that it's like such a critical word of firm hold. Because we often, like, even in this verse, we would not think of the river Saraswati, or we would not think of Para speech, whatever she tells me. You know, we would just, like, I don't know if it's some sort of a cultural convention that the Western mind wants to take this missionary position that, or this crusader that I have some sort of an awakening experience and now I have to go on this crusade and become a teacher. And it really bugs me. That's where irritation comes in. And I also have been pondering, because you mentioned to me the Yi Qing or the I Ching a few months ago, and I've been thinking about that a little bit. And so this verse comes to mind that I don't remember. I just remember studying it and the ancient Chinese symbols and stuff. On top is the mountain and underneath is the river. So that the old wise presence, you know, is on top, and then this younger, quicker energy on below. And I don't know what the complexity of it is for, but that is both, you know. And so
true.
So I can't really finish the question, but basically, because the other thing that Coco said was evolution, and that sometimes when I hear in the Western world, it becomes this yoga pants cliche, and it kind of irritates me that why is this need to become a teacher? Why can't just someone sit in their practice for 20, 30 years and then just be a direct sort of a sahaja person and just... That's kind of my question.
Yes. Well, I don't think anybody is... Thank you for asking. I would just say that there, you know, just to be clear, though obviously in the West and in the yoga world, there is a, you know, that understanding that one should progress on a professional path with anything that one does. So, I think it's easy for people to imagine that progressing on the path means becoming a teacher or becoming an adept or becoming something other than what you are. So I completely agree with you that what is really important is practicing and evolving internally, and it really doesn't make any difference how that shows up in the outer world. The other thing I would say in answer to your question about the word firm, which I think is a point well taken. And I was looking at the Sanskrit in the verse, that the word firm is a modifier of the word sankalpa, which, as you probably know, means resolution. So in other words, the point is not that you hold on firmly in the sense of clutching, but in the sense that you actually get very clear in your intention your intention in this case being really to follow the movements of the Shakti wherever they take you. And, you know, as I think you know, this path is really about a very subtle recognition of the inner movements of your own awakened, intelligent energy. So when somebody says, you know, I was following the instructions and I started to, you know, feel myself falling inside, and the, you know, the mantra and the breath fell away, that can be a signal from the Shakti that you're meant to relax the concentration. And I really sense it in Coco's question. And for many of us, it is. And it could also be, you know, that part of us which goes, oh, you know what, I don't really feel like making an effort. And what we need to discern, all of us, all the time, moment by moment, because it's only true in the moment, is, okay, what is the right practice right now? Is it to relax, which is an incredibly profound practice? Is it to just let myself be as I am, you know, which is an incredibly powerful practice? Or is just letting myself be as I am, you know, being a kind of surrender to sitting there and thinking various thoughts? So that's what Shakti will tell us if our intention is really to follow her instructions, which for some people may feel like you know, a call to do a particular creative activity, and to some people may feel like a call to really be in yourself. And so Shakti is always ours, you know. It's the inner guidance, which I hope that as a teacher, and I hope that especially the teacher within the Spandakarikas can help us clarify. So thank you for that question. And if no one else has a question, I'm giving you one more chance to raise your hand.
Sally, we've got a question from the webcast. Someone asked, would you please explain the difference or benefits of changing the flow of direction of awareness of breath in Shushumna? I've heard it has something to do with men and women's natural flow. Can you speak to that, please?
I haven't heard that. But let me give the explanation that that makes the most sense to me. First of all, the practice of taking the inhalation of taking the apana as the inhalation and the prana as the exhalation is a particular feature of the tantric texts. So it's the way the instructions are given in the Vijnana Bhairava, which is kind of my Bible of meditation. The rationale for that is that when we, and I know that there are many benefits of doing it the other way, but one of the great benefits in daily life of inhaling in and inhaling down, exhaling up, is that when we inhale in, the inhalation becomes a grounding breath. You know, it actually allows us to become aware of our connection with the earth, our connection with our base, to let ourselves take the support of the earth. And then the exhaled breath, becomes a way of consciousness uplifting itself. And this is actually my experience, that exhaling up allows my sense of self or my sense of consciousness to literally rise. It's always felt to me as though it is an uplifting way of following the breath. So, and I want to say that both of these ways of experiencing the breath have a lot of, you know, what we could call scriptural support. So you can find texts and yogis who will swear by inhale up, exhale down, and texts and yogis who will swear by inhale down, exhale up. So they're both beneficial, and you might experiment with which is the way I've done it. You might experiment with practicing it both ways and really feel what it feels like to you. So again, thank you for that question. One of the things about concentrative practice, about very specific yogic practices, is that they do engage our sense of kind of granularly trying to get it right, which is actually in its own way very beneficial, but which ultimately needs to be released and relaxed as we start to feel more and more the shakti. The concentration, however, as those of you who've done hatha yoga know, the concentration does actually bring up the shakti. It allows the shakti to become stronger, to heat up. But I want to talk about another verse, which is verse 31, which actually is very congruent with what Coco said and also what Patricia said. And this verse says, "The arising of the object of meditation in the mind of the meditator is the adept's realization of his identity with it through the force of intention." And again, this is one of those verses that we can interpret in many different ways, but what I wanted to use it as is a way of talking about yogic intention, of why intention and desire are so significant. Intention is one of the buzzwords here. It's one of the important words that's used all through the yogic scriptures. It's a synonym for strong longing for deep experience. And it's also a very important pointer to the fact that our desires, our longings, are forms of the will of the divine, the will of Shakti. The Sanskrit word for intention that's translated as intention or will is icha, which means the impulse or desire that is at the core of every creative endeavor. And so the icha, the intention, the strong desire or longing to know the self, to feel your identity with the divine, to feel your identity with your own expanding consciousness, it is not your personal will. It is actually the will of the Shakti, the will of the Spanda. It's powered by the will of the Shakti. So, and as, again, many of you know, it's that intention that allows you to follow the threads of the rising energy of the deepening process of meditation through all the different thickets and currents that come up in the inner world, whether it's the arising of an emotion like irritation, or the rising of the thought stream, or the feeling of exhaustion, that rather than putting intense the striving effort, the kind of effort that creates irritation and ultimately a feeling of separation from the object of your meditation, to recognize that it is your intention to stay in touch with the thread of Shakti, the thread of Spanda, the thread of consciousness, that is actually guiding you through the thickets of your own doubts, your own distractions, and that will always keep bringing you back to the experience of the Shakti that's at the heart of the mantra, at the heart of its sensation, at the heart of your experience of awareness, that, you know, it, and that is ever present, but which needs to be attended to much of the time, and which we attend to not by kind of digging through our experience to find it as though it were buried, but by really intending to find it, to follow it. So the truth is that every practice we do for absorbing is for absorbing ourselves in that presence. What the this verse 31 says is the arising of the object of meditation in the mind of the meditator. The object of meditation is your own pure awareness, your own Shakti, your own love, your own connection to the heart. And when that starts to arise in the meditation, in your meditation in whatever form, meaning when you start to feel the pull of the current, the inner current that may arise for you as a deep feeling of energy or as blissfulness or as love or as awareness, it's then that the experience of the true self, the true presence, starts to become real for us. And so it's very important to begin to recognize what it really means to, as you know, as the caller from New Jersey said earlier, what will, you know, the use of will in meditation really means. And what the verse says, the arising of the object of meditation in the mind is actually a kind of coded way of saying that it is the experience of our identity with consciousness, our identity with Shakti, that is what we're aiming for in our practice. So remember that this verse comes in the context of a non-dual teaching. It's always asking us to remember that our aim is to recognize the oneness between our consciousness and Shiva, the oneness between our energy and Shakti. And that is what our intent is meant to be about. It's a will to stay pointed towards that intention, while at the same time surrendering to the Shakti, which is actually carrying out the whole process. And this is why the direction that you get in every spiritual circle of surrendering, you know, of opening to what the divine wants to happen, not necessarily looking for a particular outcome or looking to be comfortable or looking for an experience that will validate your practice, but really recognizing more and more deeply the will of the Spanda Shakti, which is wanting to liberate you from identification with all those parts of you that are blocking your experience of your own pure self, of your own pure consciousness. So let's do that, this practice that we started with, of allowing ourselves to be breathed by the Shakti. Because this recognition that the process of the breath is a process of actually being opened by the life energy, the divine mother energy, which is always wanting to expand our boundaries and open us to the realization of our connectedness. This simple practice of allowing ourselves to be breathed is one of the most obvious and simplest ways of connecting to that. So let yourself be present. Let yourself be present with the feeling of the body, the feeling of your body is a mass of sensation. Sensing into the way it feels to be sitting in your posture, sitting in this chair, sitting wherever you're sitting. Sensing into the experience of being inside the skin. And as we were doing earlier, see if you can tune into the sensations in the body as though you were a newborn infant who doesn't have a name for any of it. So there's just the felt sense of your entire environment, because your eyes are closed here, your entire inner environment as a tapestry of sensation. So your attention is with the body of sensation. And you begin to allow yourself to receive the breath, feeling as though the breath is flowing over the whole surface of the front of your skin, that is, flowing over the surface of your embodied tapestry of sensation. So it's not as though the breath is simply flowing through the nostrils. The breath is flowing as if carried by a gentle wind to the entire porous surface of the front of the body. Just feel how this tapestry of sensation that we call the body is open and porous to the experience of breath. If you can sense that breath flowing in through the side of this embodied tapestry of sensation, through the right side, as though the entire right side of the body is porous, opening to the sensation of breath, which is Shakti, flowing through the left side. And again, with this sense of the body as pure sensation, feel the breath flowing in through the right side, through the pores of the right side of this body of sensation. See if you can feel the edges of the sensation of body melting into the breath and being melted by the breath. And let the whole back of this body of sensation open to the breath, feeling how the breath flows in from what we normally think of as behind, flowing in through the porous edge of this body of sensation. And see if you can let the breath open the body from every side. Thoughts arising and subsiding. Sinking into this tapestry of sensations. The breath as one more sensation. Flowing in through every pore. As you simply recognize that breath and body are in constant dynamic dance mode. The breath, a subtler form of the life energy that also manifests as the somewhat denser energy that you call the body. Breath as Shakti, entering, flowing through this body of sensation. Its touch, the touch of love, the touch of life, the touch of Shakti. See if you can allow yourself to stay present with this dynamic dance of breath and body sensation as we very gently end our class for today. Being aware of all of us here in this space of consciousness that hums and throbs with Spanda's intent to awaken us. And may we have a beautiful week. And we'll see you on the listserv in next week's class. And of course, your homework will be coming. So much love. So much blessing. Good night.